I work as a family and life educator for KW Counseling Services in Kitchener, Ontario. I've done this type of work in Syracuse, New York, and in Amherst, Massachusetts. And the more often I do a course such as self-esteem, the more I feel more positive in self-esteem. I think sometimes we do certain things because we feel we have need of it ourselves. So I'm a worker along with all the rest of you and learning some of the things that can enhance our own self-esteem. One of the first things I'd like to begin with is to ask the question, how many of you know someone who allows us not to have to deal so personally if we choose not to, and we won't know which you're talking about. How many of you know someone who wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to make this day miserable for everyone else? There's a couple. How many of you know someone who wakes up in the morning and says, even if things don't work out right, I'm going to do the best I can? Okay, how many of you are parents? Oh, wow. Okay, or work with children, or it doesn't really even have to be a parent working with a child. It's you interact with people all day long, and it's an influence on the other person as well, whether they're an adult or a child. How many of you know someone who wakes up in the morning and says, what can I do today to make it a miserable day for Johnny and to teach him to hate himself? Well, I don't think we would want to admit that we know of somebody who does, or that even if a person who does this really does it intentionally. But I think there may be a number of times that we wake up in the day, and if our pot or self-esteem happens to be fairly empty, or we think of all the things that we should have done and didn't do, or did do and shouldn't have done, that we start out the day saying, oh, why do I have to get up today? Nothing's going to go right. And then your prophecy fulfills itself, and things don't go very well. Well, we've all have a variety of experiences throughout our life that have some influence on how we feel about ourselves at this particular time. And we may look at ourselves sometimes as victims, and sometimes we may look at ourselves as victors. And I hope that by the end of this kind of awareness development session, we can lean a little bit more toward the victor side and a little less toward the victim side. Because I think we're really in charge of our own self-esteem. We did a little bit of brainstorming before the session began, and I think we might want to repeat some of these and add, for the rest of you, you can add whatever else you think about. But through our years, whatever they may be, we have heard a variety of messages about people, about ourselves. One that came up was, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. In other words, you don't know it now, forget it, you'll never learn it. What are some others that you can think of? What were some others that we came up with before?
Get off your high horse.
Get off your high horse, meaning don't be so pleased or happy or proud or whatever with yourself. Whatever that high horse meant, you were
pride
supposed to get off it.
Pride cometh before a fall.
Pride cometh before a fall, sure. What else? So therefore, don't have pride in your accomplishments, because then you're going to really get dumped somewhere along the way. Anything else?
Don't rock the boat.
Don't rock the boat. Just please other people. Don't worry about yourself. I mean, anything else?
Sticking your nose up in the air or something like that.
You think you really know something about it? Is that what you mean?
No, sticking your nose.
Oh, don't stick your nose in the air, because then you'll trip and fall. Isn't that part of it too? Yeah, don't feel so good about yourself. Somebody will knock you down a few pegs.
Mind your own business?
Mind your own business, uh-huh. Any others? All of them negative, right? All of them tending to put you down, to say, you're not so good. You're not okay. And whether the other person is starting out from an okay position or an I'm not okay position, the attempt seems to be to make the other, to put the other person down somewhat and be in a not okay position. Well, I have a couple of things on the board that I think relate to self-esteem. One is the letters I-A-L-A-C, which I think are very important. Have any idea what they stand for? Some of you may know. This is a little book written by Sydney Simon called The I-A-L-A-C Story, or The Modern Allegory to the Classical Put-Down is a subtitle of it. Any of you have heard about this? Okay. A number of years ago, when I first started using this, so it must be 15, 20 years ago at least, my husband and I were doing a marriage enrichment session in a church, and we used this on name tags, and everybody's saying, what does this mean? And we said, well, what do you think it means? What words could you put with those? And there are blank faces, and all of a sudden this one middle-aged man went from a frown to a great smile on his face, and he said, I know what it stands for. It stands for, I am Lutheran and cuddly. Now, that may fit some people more than others, but it's one of the positives that we can look at it, and if that fits you, fine. Keep it. Remember it. Act on it. It also stands for I am lovable and capable. And I think that's an indelible sign that we are born with. It's a gift of our Creator. And that we often don't believe it or accept it or even act on it. Somebody else is more capable, and you do it. You're much better at this than I am. I'm just not so lovable, you know. Other people, you know, we remember those messages that we got earlier in our lives that say, don't puff yourself up, put yourself down and be humble, wait for somebody else to recognize you. And that puts the whole responsibility for self-esteem on someone else. And who is that someone else? Who are we going to label responsible for me? Now, as a parent of a young child, we have the basic, and as a teacher, how many are teachers in here? Great. And as a teacher, we have some responsibility in this also. As an adult, we have some responsibility for all our fellow creatures. But ultimately, the responsibility lies with ourselves. As the young child, until they can begin to recognize that I have some choices and I can make some decisions for myself, they really rely on people on the outside, parents, teachers, relatives, neighbors, whoever, siblings. But then we get to the point of saying, hey, I have some responsibility in this too, and that helps develop that kind of inner control that says, hey, I'm okay. So, along with the sign that says, I am lovable and capable, and whatever else we want to put to that, I am learning and caring. There's a variety of other words that can be very positive with that, and we want to think positively. How many of you have heard of this next one, the PBPWM, GINFWMY? Okay. Please be patient with me. God is not finished with me yet. Sometimes we really need to say that to ourselves when we keep thinking, I'm just starting to learn something new. I just, 2 years ago, I knit one of the Norwegian caps under Jeanette's guidance, and I haven't done anything since. So on a couple of days ago, I went back again, and I'm starting all over again. And you say, God's not finished with me, and I still need some more practice and learning and remembering about this before it becomes a natural thing that I can do and still talk and see the rest of the world go on without putting my complete attention into that job. A number of years ago, Harris wrote a book, I'm Okay, You're Okay. It's still around, it's still a classic. There's a lot of other books that have come out that take off from this, but it's still important that it's okay to be okay. That we don't have to degrade ourselves in order to be looked on okay by other people. You know, that they are going to be the ones that will pick me up and say, no, you're really okay, so come on and stand up along with me. We're capable of doing that with permission that we can give ourselves and that we've been given. And, you know, God doesn't make junk. So, if we did if we do believe that, then we can't say that we ought not be saying to ourselves, I'm not okay. Because we're not junk. And junk is all we're, so we are okay. So there, we might look even more, think about it in the next weeks ahead. What are some of those sayings, those admonitions that you heard in your growing up about to be or not to be, to be okay or not be okay? And how do we change them? Well, sometimes it's by saying, hey, I'm okay. I can change those patterns. I can erase the tape. I can record some new messages on that tape that goes on in my head that says, I am capable. I may not know everything that I need to know in my lifetime, but I am capable of learning. I'm not the expert and specialist on the whole world, but I'll find my niche, and I can grow, and we can learn from a variety of people. You can learn from kids. You can learn from grandmas, great-grandpas, and you can learn from all those in between as well. A variety of resources that can help us to say, I'm okay. There's a book in the bookstore called Self-Esteem, A Family Affair by Jean Ilsley Clark. She has done a number of things, good things that deal with self-esteem. There's another one by Briggs called Your Child's Self-Esteem that's an old classic. That's been around for 20-some years or so. Still very important. One of the things I'd like to, just a little point from Clark's book on self-esteem, she said, has one heading that says, why is positive self-esteem important? Positive self-esteem is important because when people experience it, they feel good and look good, and they are effective and productive. And they respond to other people and themselves in healthy, positive, growing ways. People who have positive self-esteem know that they are lovable and capable, and they care about themselves and other people. They don't have to, in other words, put other people down and feel, in order to feel okay about themselves. They do not have to build themselves up by tearing other people down or by patronizing less competent people. Positive self-esteem is not to be confused with self-centeredness, machismo, being a braggart, or acting superior, all of which are attempts to hide negative feelings about oneself, such as you are important as long as you act tough, accomplished, or smart. That's an example of a negative, unhealthy central message around which to organize one's life. Instead, you are a worthwhile person as a positive, healthy message. Many of the things that you find in this book called All You Ever Needed to Know, I Learned in Kindergarten, are aimed toward feeling okay about oneself. And they're written in a kind of fun, positive way. This is one of many books written by Spencer Johnson on that deal with aspects that lead to our self-esteem. You've heard about the one-minute manager. This is the one-minute teacher, the one-minute father, the one-minute mother. I decided to buy the teacher one instead of all the others because I think it has some good things to say, and I'll be doing a course on it next week. There's three things that the one-minute books deal with. One is one-minute goal setting. What am I really about? What do I want to accomplish? What am I working toward at this time, today, this week, this month? Second is one-minute praising. I'm uncomfortable with the word praise. I would like to use the one-minute encouragement because most often when we deal with praise, we're talking about good-bad dichotomy. What a good girl you are. What a bad boy you are. And that's gotten so attached to praise that I feel uncomfortable with that word. Others may feel perfectly fine with it, and that's okay. Go on with it. Just don't connect it with good-bad labels. And the one-minute recovery. In his earlier books, he talked about the one-minute reprimand. In the one on the teacher, Johnson's referred to it as the one-minute recovery. When you recognize that you're doing something that's not aligned with your goals, that's not working out the way you want it to work out, how can you recover from that awareness? What can you learn from it? Jack Canfield has a set of tapes called self-esteem, and he talks about you can't learn less. It's a nice saying, remember it, that you can learn from a variety of mishaps, a variety of things that don't go well. A lot of people don't learn from them. They'll either try to blame, or they'll pretend it didn't exist, or it won't ever happen again, so I don't have to really think about it. But you can't learn less. It encourages us to process what went on. What happened so I don't have to experience that negative aspect again? What can I do differently next time? And that's the one-minute recovery. And then to reinforce yourself, I can do it better. I'll learn from this. Edison was asked at one time, how did you survive after 1,400 failures? How did you manage to keep going in inventing the light bulb, having failed 1,400 times? You know, we feel pretty bad at about ourselves if we fail once or twice, or heavens if we do it a third time and we still haven't learned. Edison said, it wasn't 1,400 failures. It was a 1,400-step process. Isn't that nice? That we can keep on learning. But how often do we say to ourselves when we've made a mistake, oh, what a dummy. I would venture to say that there's not anyone in this group who has never either heard it or said it without realizing what that's saying to ourselves. When we put ourselves down in words like that, our kind of unconscious takes those words and says, you are a dummy. You are a dummy. Jack Canfield used the expression, the statement about dealing with these positive or negative statements. And for instance, if you're trying to lose weight and you look at a piece of marvelous cake like the stuff we just had, and you say, everything I eat goes straight to my hips, your unconscious says, eat cake, go straight to hips. And it does.
You mean if we don't say that, it won't?
And if you say to yourself, everything I eat gets burned up as energy, your unconscious says to yourself, eat cake, burn it up. And you keep on going, and maybe you do burn it up a little bit more rather than sitting back and saying, oh, I ate so much cake, I can't do anything, and you just don't burn it up. Well, there's a couple of things I'd like to have deal with, and I mentioned that there are 8 basic skills that can lead us a little farther along the path toward a more positive self-esteem for ourselves and for those with whom we have interactions. There's a couple of things we might do, and just think very quickly about how you would finish this sentence. If I like myself, I. If I like myself, I what? Anyone want to share?
I love myself and I'm good to myself.
If I like myself, I can love myself and be good to myself. Okay? Another one.
If I like myself, I have good habits, like take care of my body, eat right.
Okay. I can have good habits and take care of my body and eat positively. Yes?
If I like myself, I feel good.
I feel good. Okay. And I can share that feel goodness with others. Okay. Anyone else?
If I like myself, others like me.
Whether they do or not, it doesn't matter. I can feel that I'm still okay and they feel I'm okay. Often what happens is what affects our feelings about ourselves is not what I think about myself. It's not what other people think about me. It's what I think they think about me, which may be a complete misreading of what's going on. Okay.
To the word that light was love in that point. Jesus said, you know, love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah, sometimes it's more easy to love someone than it is to like them.
Yes.
But it may be a case of semantics and words and how we interpret either one of them. I think that it's important to have both in our lives and to feel that we're likable, that we're lovable.
I had a teacher in the seminary who said, you don't have to like everybody, but you have to love everybody.
Yeah, that is a kind of... of an overall request, you know, we have received love, we need to share it, give it out. Don't hoard it. It's not going to run out. It'll only dry up if it's not used, if it's not acted on.
It seems to me if you don't like yourself, you can't accept the fact that anybody else will like you.
That's right.
And so you respond in a very negative manner to everything. If they act like they like you, you think they're hypocrites because nobody could like me because I'm not likable.
Yeah, and what are they really trying to get at? What do they really want out of me? And we begin to have all these doubting messages even about the other person as well as about ourselves. And we can go through life then feeling pretty much a victim. If only other people would, you know, as if we had no responsibility for it ourselves. It's all in the hands. My feelings, my whole life is in someone else's hands. So we might begin by looking at what are the kinds of things we do well. Think about that for a minute. What are the kinds of things we would like to do better? You each will have your own list. And you might make that list privately. Put the list up on a cupboard door, inside of your closet door, inside a dresser drawer. What things do I do well? It's okay to blow your own horn. Remember, that was one of the admonitions we often heard early. Don't blow your own horn, or it could be one. But it's okay to be aware of what you do well. And to be aware of what you're striving toward. What are your goals? We all have goals. Or if we don't, if we've forgotten about them, it's not too late. We can always make goals for what do I want to accomplish today? What is my goal for the next X period of time? Then I think a fourth question to ask of ourselves is, what do I do to block myself from reaching the goals I want to reach? We do a lot of things to block ourselves. We say, oh, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Somebody else might be able to do that, but not me. Any other things that you can think of? Or what do people do to block themselves?
I have no willpower.
I have no willpower, so I can't ever lose weight. I've tried it before. It's never worked. So I just won't. Just no willpower. Never, can't change it. Procrastinate. Well, maybe tomorrow it'll be a little bit easier. Maybe next week will give me more time. And okay, anything else? What else do we use?
I'm too old for that.
I'm too old. Even if you're 5 or 6, sometimes kids will say. Or teenagers, you know, I can. Or in their 20s or 40s. It doesn't have to wait for somebody to be in their 60s or 70s to say, I'm too old for that.
You just about reach your goal and then you sabotage it. Somehow, if things are getting too good, it's feeling too good, and
I gotta pull back because you know, things are going too well, and maybe they're not supposed to. And
I'm not worthy.
I'm not worthy. Yeah, we tell ourselves that, and if we tell ourselves that, we're really not believing any of this, are we? Of I'm okay, I am lovable and capable, or that that God doesn't make junk.
I don't have time.
Somebody else has, I only have 24 hours in the day. Somebody else really has more, and that's why they get it accomplished. And I can't. And we're back in the victim stand again, that, you know, I just don't have enough time. There's not enough hours in the day for me. We probably haven't planned them well enough.
I've never learned to be well organized.
And how might we turn some of these around to be more positive? We can take that and I've never learned, that's past tense. I've never learned it before, so I can't ever possibly learn it again, is what we're telling, learn any more about it, is what we're telling ourselves. If we change that and put an ing on it, and we can say, without the negative, we can say, I am learning to be more organized. It involves us right now. It's not putting it off next week. It's not just saying, well, it's never happened in the past, so it won't ever happen again. But I'm in there right now. I am overcoming procrastination. I am developing willpower. Affirmations, as someone told me recently, affirmations are in now. Affirmations are big things. And so you'll have sheets of affirmations coming out from various people. But you can make your own. It's put them in the present of being involved in them right now, acting on them, usually using an ing word, and say them to yourself. These are some exercises that we might do in just getting in touch with where we are and where we want to go. What am I still working toward? Recognizing what we do to block ourselves and what we can do to overcome that blocking, to put it in a more positive, active, participating form of language. The IALAC, looking at I am lovable and capable, telling ourselves that I am loving, I am working on being capable, have an important impact on our self-esteem. When we believe that, we will feel more like it. Believing and being. We're going to be more willing to take some risks. Such as meeting some new people when you're in a community of strangers or many people, or there are many people that you don't know, that it's okay to introduce yourself. It's okay to get into a conversation rather than waiting for them to come to you. How often do we get into a new situation and then end up saying, well, I won't go back there again. People aren't very friendly. I sat there and nobody came and talked to me. Without recognizing that we have some responsibilities toward that ourselves, of what can I do? Of going and saying, yeah, hi.
Especially in church, they tend to do that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Variety of places. Church is certainly one of them. We wait for the other person to come because I'm the new person, so therefore the real members there ought to know better and ought to come and be gracious. Well, I think we all have that responsibility. So one of the exercises that I like to tell my classes when I teach adults or teenagers is to do the exercise where, and you can all close your eyes if you want to do this so that you don't have to see somebody else watching you or know that they're all closing their eyes also, put your hand in front of your face and just look at your hand as if it were a mirror and give yourself a smile as you see it in the mirror and sort of imagine, use some creative thinking in your head as to what it looks like on that mirror hand of yours. You can do this at home in your bathroom when you wake up in the morning brushing your teeth or comb your hair or shave or put on makeup, whatever. Look in that mirror as you are now looking in your hand and give yourself a big smile to say, I'm okay, I am lovable and capable, and then go to yourself. You don't have to wait until somebody else comes and gives you a kiss. You can be the first one to affirm yourself, and then you'll be more willing to affirm the others that you see. So that's an exercise. If anyone's back in class on Saturday afternoon, I'm going to ask how many of you have done it these past several days. Self-affirmation. I'm okay. I don't have to wait for somebody else to do it to me. I can affirm myself. I'm okay. That's affirming God's creation. you. So that's that will help us be less less tendency to blame others for wherever we are. We begin to take a little bit more responsibility for ourselves. And we won't say, if only, or they make me feel. You're responsible for your own feelings. We'll get into that a little bit later. You are in charge of how you feel. Is that scary? You are in charge of how you feel. It's been so comfortable to let it rest in somebody else's hands. They make me. You make me. He, she, it make me. But not I. We always use all the other pronouns and we forget to use I. I have responsibility for how I feel. It's not very easy. It's not very comfortable. And it seems such a load off the shoulder to place it in someone else's hands and say, you make me feel okay. We have a tendency to say when something goes wrong, you made me do such and such. And not take responsibility for what may have happened. It's not what other people say or do to you. It's what you say to yourself after they stop talking or acting. Think about that. It's not what other people say or do to you that really influences how you think, feel. We own our own feelings. Feelings aren't right or wrong. Feelings are. There may be painful feelings and there may be pleasure feelings, but they're okay. They're not right or wrong. We may want to say it's bad to feel angry, but it's good to feel excited and happy. Sometimes we might even say it's bad to feel excited because then you're blowing your own horn and we're back down to a minus one again. Feelings aren't right or wrong, feelings are. And when we deny other people's feelings, somebody is feeling rather sad and you say, or worried and you say, oh, stop worrying. You know, do you ever stop? No. And yet we see a little kid crying and somebody comes along and says, stop crying, stop crying. Stop crying, or I'll really give you something to cry about.
You know, look. You feel like saying it sometimes.
Oh, we do, yes, but all we need to recognize is that it uses up a lot of energy that's not fair and that's not going to help the situation, and we feel even worse as well as they do. And they'll begin to cry even more. You can hear see these little kids go, they're really trying to stop, and they just can't because they're feeling something in there. And to deny the feeling is to deny the other person. So we need to own our own feelings and to allow other people have feelings. And to recognize, often when I'm in a grocery store and a little toddler is really fussing about something and the mother is just at her wit's end and has done all sorts of bribings or all sorts of threatenings, I'll walk past the shopping cart and I'll say to the little kid and or the mother, boy, things aren't going very well today, are they? It's a sad, sad world right now, isn't it? And the little kid or the mother will go, you know, in a sense, somebody understands how I feel and it's okay, and I'm okay. And then they can feel a little bit better about themselves. And then they don't have to deal so much in the depths of the feelings, but now what can I do about it? Give up on trying to get that candy bar or of being the perfect parent who never has a child who fusses. I mean, that's an impossibility to recognize. The kids will try your patience at times to get their way and to stand your ground without really pushing them underneath it, without degrading or devaluing them. And when we say others don't make you feel, does it mean that it gives us permission to say all sorts of cruel, nasty, horrible things to other people and then say, well, you know, I can't take responsibility for your feelings, but it does remind us that we need to be caring to other people as we are caring to ourselves and not be cruel to them. Eleanor Roosevelt said a long time ago, no one can make you feel inferior without your permission. since we have to give permission to feel inferior. We can hear the words and then say, well, I really don't feel inferior. I'm sorry, that's the way you feel about me. Whether we say it out loud or think it inside. Whatever that feeling, no one can make you feel blank without your permission. Recognize how we give permission to other people to put us down that we don't need to. Accept yourself is another one of the basic skills. How often do we accept ourselves? Not with, that's the way I'm always going to be, take me or leave me. Or because my parent or a teacher way back in second grade said such and such to me, boy, you can't ever learn math, you'll never do well, I guess I just won't ever try. You know, maybe she had a bad day then. Maybe it was something that you didn't quite hear well enough, or you were preoccupied with some other concern at that time and didn't hear the instruction. And there's always new possibilities. You're lovable and capable of learning new things. Or accepting the limitations and recognizing where you share with someone else. I'll do this and you do that. And together we can get it done. How we cooperate and complete each other. Not compete with, but complete each other. We're all winners. That's part of accepting ourselves. We're all winners. Everyone in here won a very important race that you probably have never, ever thought about. You're one of 500 million to have won the race that you ran. And the race that you've all won is the sperm race. You know, the odds are 1 to 500 million that you turned out to be who you are. So we're all winners. I mean, if we weren't winners, you wouldn't be here. And if you say, I can't handle that, you're not being honest with yourself, because if you couldn't handle whatever it was that came along, you wouldn't be here either. It would have done you in. So just remember that you're winners. There's an exercise that you can do. And to recognize that what we say in our head and what we feel in our body has a real strong connection. And you can lean back, put your head down between your knees, or as low as you can get, and say, I'm great.
I'm great.
Say it like you mean it.
I'm great.
Okay. Any of you believe that? Didn't sound like it. When you put yourself in a negative kind of position, which that was, you know, really crawling down, it's hard to be affirming about yourself. Now, put up your hand in a very, you know, is this, what's the...
Rocky.
You know, the winning position, and say, I'm depressed. Don't think it'll work? Give it a try. Say, I'm depressed. Are you depressed? No. So when you're in a doing a kind of positive body, you stand up straight, you're you know, winning, and you're feeling, you will feel that way, even if you've been telling yourself some other messages. So to be able to say, I'm enough, I'm okay, I'm complete. At this time, that doesn't mean I won't learn some new things, that I won't add some more to my repertoire, but at this point, I'm okay, I'm enough. And then smile, because it makes everybody else wonder, what's going on? What you're up to?
I'll make your day miserable. I'll smile.
Okay. And it helps us when we go back to those old messages that say that where we've been told somewhere along the way, you can't do anything right. Or why do you always? Why can't you ever? A few weeks ago, a young family was visiting us, and we live near a park. And so after dinner, we went out for a walk and took the kids to the play section of this park. And there was a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old in this family. And the 4-year-old crawled upon one of these little horse swings and was pumping away himself and having a good time. Another mom came with a 4-year-old and maybe a 6-7-year-old boy, and the 7-year-old went off doing his own thing. And the 4-year-old looked at the horse, and mother said, "Come on, you can get up there," in a kind of negative tone of voice. And the little kid sort of climbed up on the horse, and he didn't quite know how to pull it himself, and she said, "Don't you even know how that works? Do I have to do everything for you?" And so she pushed it, and then she looked over at the little, our friend with the 1-year-old in a little baby swing, and the kid was moving back and forth, but he was going, sort of hesitant and fearful, and she said to him, "Look at the baby over there. The baby's smiling, having a good time. You're even worse than the baby." And I thought, oh dear. Then our little 4-year-old friend got off, and that sort of gave this other 4-year-old permission to get off too. And the mom said, "You don't really like riding on the horses." And I thought, well, that's acknowledging the child's feelings. That's one point in her favor. And she undid it by saying, "You really are a fraidy cat coward, aren't you?" Oh. And the child just sort of sulked away. So words can hurt. And that 4-year-old hasn't learned some other ways of responding and saying, "Well, gee, Mom, that's the way you may think, but right now my stomach is sort of upset and I don't want to go on a swing that rocks it even more." You know, that's not in a 4-year-old's vocabulary. But it could be in the parent's vocabulary that says, "Gee, you really don't want to go on the swing today. It doesn't feel as much fun as it does some other times. Let's see what else we can do." And let the child lead the way for what next, and have a sense of, "That's okay, I don't have to like the swing all the time. Next time maybe it'll be okay." So how we can help a child, how we can help ourselves to accept how we are is helped by recognizing our own feelings, or having somebody else recognize them for us and help us with them. The up until now that I spoke about earlier is another one of the basic skills. To be able to say, "Up until now, I haven't been able to like the slide. Up until now, I've not been very good at math. Up until now, I don't feel the bravest at meeting new people." And then, what's the next step? That's part of the goal setting, perhaps, that you might do, or affirming yourself to say, "But I don't have to limit myself by what I was limited in before. That's just the way I am." Put that on one side and then say, "Up until now, that's just the way I've felt most comfortable, but I don't feel quite so comfortable in it anymore. Now what else can I do? Up until now." It's marvelous also if you've seen a person interacting in a very negative way, whether it's an adult or a child, say, "Up until now, I haven't been the happiest with what's been happening. However, there's always new possibilities." Helps us to look at people in a whole new light. How many of you really, whether it's a relative or whether it's a friend, or somebody who was a friend and then something's happened, or a child, can remember the terrible times? And we want to keep those times going on, even though years have passed and the child has changed. You may have thought of your six-year-old as being very clumsy. Well, that's one of the natural abilities of six-year-olds. They're clumsy. They haven't, their growth spurt has come, but the practice at managing that growth hasn't. So you may still look at them at age 36 as, quote, clumsy, when they may not be anymore. Or because they've been called clumsy so long, that they feel that's just the way they'll always have to be. There's no other possibility. And they don't believe their sign that says, "I'm lovable and capable of learning new things." Henry Ford said a long time ago, "If you think you can, or if you think you can't, you're probably right. What you think is what you get." So if you think, boy, this has been difficult before, I've really had a struggle to get through this, but I will learn. Up until now, it's been more difficult, but I've had a little bit more experience, and this time, I can gain a little bit more headway. That's like thinking, everything I eat, I burn up as energy, kind of thinking. I can manage it. So you can replace those negative thoughts with up until now, and go into a new possibilities. And you can also help that with, I feel great. That kind of body language that says, I'm okay. Another possibility as we work toward enhancing our self-esteem is to do a success chart. Keep a little booklet. The other day, my husband discovered he was sitting next to someone out on the patio who had a book with the same kind of cover that his, one of these with nice outside covers and inside blank pages where you can do all sorts of things, draw, put in notes from lectures you attend, ideas that come to your head, reminders of what you want to work on or things you want to grow on or books that you want to read. That might be something you can do also. Find a nice book, even get a little 39-cent spiral bound notebook that keeps record of things that you've accomplished. Now, we may have that old message in the back of our head that says, pride goeth before a fall, or don't be so uppity. And when we want to say to ourselves, up until now, I've been hesitant to encourage myself and to consider my successes, but that may be an important new step for me. So to get your book and write down things. One of the exercises I have people do in my classes would be to take some time, and we don't have a lot of time, so we won't do it right now. But you can take your age, whatever it may be. If you're 30, divide it into threes, whatever the age is, and for each third of your life, write down 5 things you accomplished, 5 successes. So if you're 30, you'd have the first 10 years successes, the second 10 years successes, the third 10 years successes, or whatever that amount. Now, one of the things most of us are likely to say, big deal, 5 successes in 10 years, you know, why even bother? Well, that's just a start. That's just a starting point to get you going, to recognize the things that you have done well, and to pat yourself on the back for it. Look, I have accomplished this. It's been difficult. Even to start the exercise, that's an accomplishment. Because we are so hesitant to give ourselves approval. We're waiting for other people to approve us. Someone, some anonymous face out there that we expect has a crystal ball and knows what it is that we need. Did any of you have a registered psychic for a parent? You know, somebody who could foretell the future, could read your mind. Anyone grow up with a parent who was a mind reader? Anyone grow up with a parent who had a crystal ball? How did you get them to know what you needed? How did they find out what you needed?
You asked for it.
You asked for it. Did you always get what you asked for?
No.
Not necessarily. But you can ask. Sometimes you'll receive and sometimes maybe not. But in order for the other person to know what you need to ask for it. So we can't sit there saying to your partner, oh, I wish my partner would just give me a big hug right now. I wish. I'm just going to get some mental telepathy to jump on over there that says, give me a hug. And the hug doesn't come and you say, guess my partner doesn't care about me. You know, how is that person supposed to know what it is that you need unless you can identify it yourself and share that information with them? So we may have to give that information. And that it's okay, part of that success chart may include, I asked for a hug from a friend. I asked for a hug from my partner or from my child. if that's been a difficult thing to do and you're able to do it and you're still alive, write it down. If it killed you, then you won't have to worry about it any longer. But put that success, we might talk about it as a success chart or a success book or a victory log or a strengths list. What are some of the strengths that you have that you can share with other people that can enrich your life as well as others' lives? The kind of thing you do in exchange for something else that somebody else does. Or are we only ones that keep on doing, and don't ever let anyone else share their gifts with me or with you? I think it's reciprocal. We need to give and take, to let the other person be a receiver as well as a giver, and for us to receive as well as to give. So that when we come up against a time when it is really quite difficult, and we don't know whether we have the strength or the courage or the ability, we can look back at that book and say, but, you know, I have accomplished something similar to this. And other things have worked when I've really put my mind to it or when I've done some careful researching and did some planning to it. How can I plan so that this next thing will work better? If you have a child who you feel is not the most courageous, is not willing to try new things, is really scared of going off to school because they don't know what the kids are going to say or the teacher's going to be like or whatever, you might even now start to develop a strengths list or a booklet. If they're a pre-reader, you can have them help you cut pictures out of magazines. And remember their finest moments. It's important to remember your own finest moments. It's helpful as a parent or even as a grandparent of young children to help remember their finest moments. Or even to share with your siblings some fine moments that says to them, hey, yeah, I am okay. We are okay. Another couple of basic skills, to speak for yourself. Now, I do a 30-hour program called Effectiveness Training where we learn the skills of I messages and listening and such. And that can be very helpful. It can be very helpful in just a few minutes of awareness to recognize when do you speak for yourself and when do you speak for the world. Everybody likes. Now, how do you know that everybody likes peaches, for instance? Well, I saw 5 people eat peaches. Well, then you can only speak for those 5. And maybe they took it only because they were hungry and really didn't like it anyway. So then maybe you're down to only speaking for yourself and to say, I like peaches. And that's okay. Nothing wrong to admitting what you like. We often learned in our early years that I was a very poor word to ever use. How many of you learned in English classes never to begin a sentence with I? Because that was cheeky or it was, you know, whatever. It was improper. Well, we often translated that to other statements using words I. Using the word I were also improper. And I don't think that's what was meant by it. You can only speak for yourself when you're making a judgment. I think, I believe, I feel, I need. That's okay too. We may need to really check out what we're hearing the other person saying. If somebody does say, boy, are you dumb, check it out by saying, it sounds as if you don't think I can do anything right. And they'll probably say, no, I don't really mean that, but didn't you know that this was... Oh, so you're meaning you're really referring to this special time that I didn't do the thing the way you thought I should do it. Yeah. Well, it might be helpful if you gave me more specifics. You know, we could learn something along about that, too. So sometimes just listening and clarifying. Often we get involved in assumptions. We assume that we understand what the other person has said. And who is it that said the path to hell is paved with false assumptions? I mean, we get into all sorts of problems because we assume things incorrectly. And whenever we do, you might just think about dividing that word and recognize that whenever we assume without checking it out, we tend to make an ass out of both you and me. Whenever you use the word assume, remember how it's spelled and think about that.
And the last is the statement that we might say to ourselves whenever we are confronted with somebody who we don't agree with, doesn't agree with me, or feels that I didn't meet their expectations, and we not always know what the other person's expectations are, so how are we capable of meeting them? They need to tell us. And then we may need to negotiate on those expectations. But no matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. It's an important affirmation to say to ourselves as frequently as possible. No matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. I may need to have to change some of my ways of responding. I may need to learn some new ways, some new skills. I may need to have some problems to solve, but I am still a worthwhile person. I am a child of God, and God doesn't make junk. No matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. Well, questions, comments that you want to share?
Capability, yes. capable. Mm-hmm. It sort of equates me to some kind of a performance that we have to keep up. And when we come to a certain point when we have to sort of sit back, then our, you know, feeling goes down. And so...
So you're wondering about the word capable, mm-hmm. whether that limits us and whether it always needs to be something put into action?
That's right.
That could be a very narrow definition of it. I'd like to use a broader one that says, you know, I can learn a variety of things. I can learn about encouraging myself. I'm capable of learning some new ideas. I'm capable of reading about some positive skills that can be helpful. I'm capable of... smiling, that's an action, I guess, too, isn't it? But even I'm capable of saying I'm okay to myself. So maybe it's action inside as well as outside.
Mm-hmm. Not always performing.
Not always performing, having to have a finished product. It may be in process, and we can be thankful for that. Yes?
Can I test something? I'm going to assume something
here. Okay.
I'm assuming that...
And that's fine, you're checking it out, so...
That you're Canadian.
I'm a U.S. citizen.
Pardon?
I'm a U.S. citizen. We've only been in Canada 7 years.
Okay, well, I'm assuming that you're a Canadian. It is generally assumed that Canadians do not have self-esteem as over against Americans or people.
Yeah.
You know, is that... as a Canadian, how do you handle that? Is that a false assumption, and does it affect you?
I don't think it's affected me. We've been there just 7 years, and I've had 48 years in the States. But I think there is the feeling about being second-class citizens with this great, overwhelming U.S. that sits down below our borders and all the things they can do and so forth, and all the money that they have and all the influence they have in the world. That's probably why I do self-esteem courses in Canada, because I think there's no reason for them to feel like second-class citizens. We are an important country, and we have many capabilities that, you know, Edison was a Canadian. I mean, we have a lot of great people.
I agree. I was conceived in Canada. I was born in the United States. United States, you know, how do we handle that? You know, do we have any right to feel that way? And what does it do to us
yeah.
to feel that way?
I don't think anyone has a right to really feel I am better. I have to put someone else down to feel okay about myself. And I think sometimes the U.S. may do that. But that's a generalization, and they're always they're seldom accurate. But I think what might be helpful is for U.S. citizens to encourage all people to feel okay about themselves and to say, you know, you can do it. You're capable. We can give you some support and success, encouragement, and you can do it. We can give you some starts. I mean, we did that in redeveloping Germany and Japan after the war, and look at where they've gone. They've really gone. Now we need to have them come back and encourage us. And we don't have to put someone else down, whatever the color is. You know, this is rainbow emphasis. Without regard to the color, we're okay. Someone maybe have more abilities in music. That's okay. I'll enjoy the music that we had out during the coffee break. I can't play either of those instruments, but I can enjoy what they're doing. But I can probably teach some awareness about self-esteem that they may not be able to do. And that's okay. We can share our gifts. We don't all have to do what everybody else does. We can share our gifts with each other and encourage each other. Okay, in the back.
Just briefly, sometimes I think we get mixed messages. Mm-hmm. You know, you read articles about Superwoman or Superman, mm-hmm. or whatever it is, and they're the people that are on the cover of the magazine, and you know, you read about their lists of attributes and what all have you, but... And so then you look at them and you make a comparison, which I think most of us have a tendency to do. And you know, say it's somebody who is proficient in so many things that you think, oh, I could never be like that. So you have a tendency to say, well, so I'll just give up. And I think that society has to take some of the responsibility for saying, you know, this is a figure that nobody knows what's going on behind the scenes. You know, this woman is a professional, but she also has a housekeeper and a gardener.
Uh-huh. Why?
She takes care of her children.
And why do all these people who do the scrubbing... Why are all these people who do the scrubbing or the waxing of floors smiling? Because they're paid to do it. Because they enjoy it. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And that Madison Avenue and advertising needs to take responsibility for putting out a false image, but we also need to take responsibility for ourselves, saying that's not really the way the world is. People aren't all like that, and I'm okay. I may have more weight on than I'd like to carry, and if I decide that that's not healthful for me, then I can choose to lose it, and I can develop my will. I'm developing my willpower to lose it. If it's not going to affect my health, I can still be happy and a whole person. So we can still say something to ourselves, even though we see those gorgeous images on television.
I have a tendency to, I always say, beat myself up emotionally. All the negative tapes that I've heard and like we were talking about are so ingrained in me and so part of my self-talk that I've been trying for the last couple of years to reverse that, and it seems like it's very hard to let go of those old negative tapes. And affirmations seem to help, but you have to be so consistent. And then I tell myself, I'm no good because I'm not consistent, you know. And that's really
and then it's yeah, and then you dig yourself your hole even deeper.
It's like a vicious cycle, you know. I don't know how to break it.
Have you seen this book?
Yeah.
It's got a lot of worksheets, workspaces in it, which is really very helpful. And part of it might be writing out all those negative messages that you have heard and then rewrite them into a more positive one. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to be consistently consistent.